welcome to another episode of the Single Girl's Guide to Life, your weekly guide to single life living in your 20s, 30s, and 40s. I'm Chantelle Dyson, a single life confidence coach, helping single women to embrace their single life. And this week, we are inviting on a very special guest to share their experience of being single with you. So it's not just me having a little chat away, as it always has been for a long while. We've had a couple of interview episodes previously with Cheryl Muir and Rosie Leach, but this week we are going to be speaking to Alex. Alex is a small business owner running a tech support company, and she has been single for 5 years. She is part of the Single Girls Club, both online, has been there in person, and is joining us on our getaways as well. And we've had a great number of chats in the Single Girls Club online, which is why I wanted to bring her on the podcast to share some of the conversations that sometimes just me and Alex have had, because that's who's been in the Zoom chat, the monthly Zoom chat we have, and just some of the things that come up in some of the text chats that she's continued to support and be part of, and making those friendships and celebrating single life together. So a big welcome to you, Alex. How are you doing?
Thank you. It's really lovely to be here. And it's, I think sometimes you forget like how nice it is to talk to other people that just understand you. And I think that's why I like being here, because it's like you actually get what it's like in its entirety. Whereas like when you talk to other people, they kind of get it, but they don't get it. And that's like a massive thing.
Yeah, it is it's the people that haven't been single recently and they forget what it's like to be single, and you just get loads of cliched answers back from them, like it'll happen when you're not looking, or there's a really big one, like there's plenty more fish in the sea, which is just eye-rolly. And it also assumes that we're looking for one particular thing, which I know we've spoken about and will come up whether it's right now or in a second. I feel like we should do a little bit more of an introduction before we get into the ideas around the kind of different models that you could introduce in terms of single life, and that they don't just have to be looking for one long time commitment for forever and that's what it's going to be. But let's go back to bringing you in and having you on the podcast. So you are a business owner and you are single. How do you find that dynamic? Because it could be quite lonely running a business and being at the top of that, plus being single then means you don't have the natural support per se that would fall to a romantic partner if you live with them or something like that. How do you find that?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So I started my business was a side hustle in 2019. So it started out, I was working for a facilities management company. I was a project coordinator. I was setting up tech to make things better. And one of the subcontractors went, can you help me? And I was like, of course I can help you. I love helping people, and helping people with tech has always been something that I've loved. And as we got closer to the end of the year, they needed more help. And I was kind of bored of being stuck in the 9 to 5. So I kind of took the leap in 2019, handed in my notice. They went, yeah, you've got a three-month notice, which obviously landed in March 2020.
Yeah, of course it did.
Just what you wanted when you hand your notice in 2019. And I started the business, and it was, to start with, it was a virtual assistance business. It was very much I'll do your emails, I'll do this, I'll do that. And as I learned about being online and doing all the things, I was like, oh, I like learning about this, and I like learning about this, and oh, I can do this with that. And I just became a complete and utter tech nerd. And as I was on my Instagram and talking to people about things that I'd learned, they were like, oh, can you help me with that? Can you help me? And I almost fell into this kind of tech support role. And they were like, well, you're not like the creepy guy in the IT cupboard. You're fun. You break it down. You make it easier to interact with. And I'm like, yes, that's amazing. But like when it comes to being single and a business owner, I find it can be actually really nice, because I'm a night owl. I'm not an early bird. Like my most productive time is between like 7 and midnight. But being single, it means that like if I want to take a lunch break, 11 till 3, have a nap, go out, meet my friends, go see my sister, I can do that. and then come home, because I don't have anyone that I'm obliged to sit and have dinner with or make dinner for or watch a TV show together. Like, I don't have to do that. So I can actually use my most productive time to be productive in the business. But yeah, there are some times, like when something goes wrong and you just want that person to turn to at the end of the day, it can be quite hard because you don't know someone's definitely going to be there. But I say, I've been single now for coming up to 5 years. And I think I've learned over time to have different people for different reasons in my life. So I'm not ever going to solely rely on one person ever again. Because when I was in a relationship previously, like, I lost a lot of my friendships. I lost touch with my friendships, and I've spent 5 years regrowing them, re-nurturing them, re-establishing them, because I'd got so sucked into being with that one person that it made me realize that I didn't. So now, like, when something goes wrong, firstly, I'm really, really lucky that my business has been able to employ my sister. So when something really is going wrong, I'm like, ah! And I sent like this massive, like, capital letter text message, like, are you okay? And I'm like, this has happened, that's happened. And I can let that go there. And then I've also got some business friends that I've curated over the last 2.5 years. And I now am able to go to them and be like, oh my gosh, you don't believe what so-and-so has just done. I don't know how to respond to this. And they're like, right, as a business owner, I'd say this, this, and this. But as your friend, they're expletives kind of thing. Like, and I think that's the thing that I've learned most about being single is, like, you can have different people for different parts of your life. Like, you do not have to solely rely on the one who is going to be there for your every need. No one's there for every one of your needs. Even when you're in a relationship, there is going to be part of that missing, because no one can be everything. It's impossible.
Or it just puts a strain on that relationship, because you're going to that person not just for when you're frustrated at work, frustrated with friends, frustrated with the house, but you're going to them for all of those things, when in actual fact, maybe with the friends, you should be going to other friends or people within that context. Or if it's work, go to someone in the workplace that does that. And you can bring some of it home and summarize. And if it's happening when you're at home via emails, of course, that makes sense if they're there and then. But the pressure it puts on someone, not just even in the letting things out needs, but who you go and spend time with. I think it's that naivety we fall into. I did the same in my own marriage, in the sense of I still saw lots of other people. And I think there was a whole element of not quite opening up as much as I could have with everyone and expressing what I really needed and knowing that. That was a kind of part of my own journey. But it is this element of they are the default when you're together. And if you're not careful of watching out for that, for whenever people decide if they want to get back into a relationship, that they do, that they keep their life filled up with other people. And it's not just that single person. And then they forget about the single friends that they did have before. They forget to touch base and forget to reach out and say, hey, what's going on? And that's when those friendships go away. But you said about, like, consciously nurturing friendships and relationships with other people and not necessarily in a romantic sense. How do you keep those friendships going all that time?
So I've got a tick list with all my friends' names on it. And I make sure I cross it off every month that I've made contact, so that if I don't, then the next month I've got to do it twice because I've neglected them. So I made a really conscious effort, like, who are the people that I want to see? Who are the people I want to contact? And literally making sure I sit and go, oh, should we have a call? Like, some of my friends aren't near here anymore. They've moved away. Like, one of my friends lives in Cornwall now. So seeing them isn't like a jump in the car and pop round for dinner kind of thing anymore. It's a, okay, we're going to have to sit on the phone for an hour or two. But I'm like, I'm always messaging them, and I always make sure that I make a conscious effort not to be just like, hi, how are you? And then not reply. And I think it's really important to make a conscious effort instead of saying to yourself, which I did for a long time, oh, I'll do that tomorrow. And then tomorrow just doesn't appear. And then you've got 6 weeks down the line and you've neglected that friendship again because, like, just life's got in the way. Like, there's so many plates to juggle as an adult that a plate will drop, and 9 times out of 10 you're more than likely to drop a friendship than you are dropping feeding yourself, going shopping for food, cleaning, cooking, looking after yourself, doing work. Like, that friendship is probably one of the first few plates you're going to drop. So yeah, I now have like a list and I cross it off.
I mean, we laughed and I was quite shocked at the suggestion, but I love it as an idea, because we would do it with anything else that we put down as a priority. We would put the time into our schedules to make sure we exercise, or to go and have time to ourselves, or we do a to-do list and allocate time to it and tick it off as we go. So why would we not apply the same thing that keeps us efficient and productive in business and in life to maintaining friendships? I think that's a little golden piece of info there.
Sharing. It's almost like a habit tracker in a way. So it's like you track all your other habits, you track how much water you drink and all that. And also I track to make sure I make contact with people and make sure that my network doesn't falter.
Yeah.
Because there are going to be times that I need those people being on my own. I am going to need them. And I want to make sure that when I do, that they're not like, oh, here she is, got a problem again. Well, of course she's here. Like, you don't want that from a friendship.
No, you want to be talking about the good stuff and catching up and being there for the other person as much as they can be there for you as well.
Yeah.
So in the sense, you said you had different people for different things. And there's one element that I know that we've spoken about and that single people really, really struggle with. And I know it's definitely different people will take to the ideas around this differently because of their own kind of personal experience, thoughts and beliefs. But could you share a little bit about the particular area of intimacy and how you facilitate that area of your life that I know so many singles struggle with the concept of, and how you came to the conclusion of doing what you now do and having different people for different things?
Yes. So I came out of a relationship that to a level had a level of emotional abuse to it. So it left me feeling very detached at the time, but I still needed physical contact. Like, I'm a person that needs a hug, and that allows me to know that I'm okay. I'm very needy in that sense because of what happened at the end of my relationship. But I also knew at the same time I was going to struggle to open the door to my home and my space because of that. So I had to make some really conscious decisions early on, like, what was I going to do around dating? What was I going to do around all of those factors? And I knew for a long time that even when I was in my relationship and I was with that person for on off 8 years, because I had a very big accident, which means we took a year off because I needed to learn to walk again and I didn't want to burden that person with that journey. It was a very independent journey that I needed to make on my own. But we got back together and we moved in, we did all of those things. But when we got back together, I was mentally wasn't stimulated because that person had their own ways of doing things, and I got bored easily. Got bored really easily because it kind of fell into a routine, and I'm not that kind of person. It was very much a, you come home from work, you have a meal, you watch a film, you go to bed, and it was very, very monotonous. And I felt that as a person, I was incredibly needy for contact and intimacy from them that they couldn't give me. And it made me very much think, like, was it a me thing? Did I have a sex drive that was just too high? And that was a big question that I had at the time. And I started as a teenager and as like in my early 20s, really investigating that, like, what was it? And like, what did I want? What did I need? And that's when I realized that probably all of my life, I'd been interested in men and women and the differences and how they interact differently. It was probably something I'd always known, but where I'd fallen into this relationship and have been with them for 8 years, I'd never explored it. I'd never gone on adventures. And near the end of our relationship, I said to him, like, I'm bored. I want something different. Like, this is not doing it for me anymore. It lacks excitement. It lacks adventure. It lacks everything that I'm looking for. But that was across the whole relationship. Like, it wasn't just the intimacy section. It was the whole relationship. There was no drive for him to progress in work and things like that. So I said to him, I want to try and do this. And I said, I want an open relationship. We can both see other people, but we need to talk about it. We need to communicate. And that's where it all started. And then from there, I realized that my relationship was no longer making me happy because I could no longer communicate. And it just, there was so many barriers. So I started talking to people that are more in the polyamorous lifestyle, bit of polyamory, bit of swinging, and in that kind of areas. And as I started talking to people and just starting conversations, I realized that actually I like a variety of things. If you're doing the same thing or with the same person for any length of time, like my brain gets bored. I know what you're going to do next. I know how this happens. And I'm like, cool, brilliant. That's 5 minutes done. Like, thanks very much. And that for me, like once you get to know someone's, what's the word I used the other day? Like when you know someone's points and you know where you can push them over the edge, you can do it faster and faster and faster every time. And that gets boring. Unless you specifically make a challenge out of extending that time and you have to mentally be prepared for that, it gets boring. So when I stepped fully out of my relationship, I was no longer living in the home at the same time, which we had to do for 6 months at the end of the tenancy. So we had 6 months of sharing a house, two separate bedrooms, incredibly awkward. When I got this place and I was on my own, I kind of went, I want to try as much as I can in all the different places that I can, because if I'm not going to experiment now, when am I going to experiment? And that was literally it. And I think if anyone's going into a single kind of life and going, I'm not going to be intimate with anyone, as long as you're being safe, and that's my biggest thing, be safe, always have like that one friend that you can say anything to and be like, right, I'm seeing this person, I'm going to be in this place and I'm going to be there at this time, go and do anything, because you are never going to have another point where you can just be free to just be yourself. And I think that's the thing I found most liberating was like, yeah, I went to a swingers club. That was eye-opening. Like you walk in a room and you're like, I don't know where to put my eyes. Like, where do I look, kind of thing. And it really opened your eyes up to actually what was out there beyond the four walls of your own home. Like, there are places where things go on that you kind of can research and go, pardon? And then actually there are places that can be done in reality that are safe. And that's the beauty of those spaces. They're safe, they're coordinated, you're looked after, and everyone in that space respects each other. Like, no is no. And if someone isn't listening to no, the other people in that space will stand up for you. And I think that was really comforting to be able to do that too, which then led me to finding my friend. He's been my friend for coming up to 5 years. He pops in and pops out. He works away. And the beauty of it is I love the fact that I don't have to meet his family. He doesn't have to meet my family. I can still run my business. If I'm busy, I can say, no, I'm busy. And it's beautiful. He's my friend. So I talk to him most days in some way, shape, or form. So he's like my best friends with benefits, without a doubt. And then we both have other friends. But the biggest thing we have is we communicate. We talk all the time. If we're going to see someone new, we tell each other who they are, where we're going, what we're doing. And then afterwards we have a chat, because we're like main friends. Like, that's a big part of the communication that we spend together. And we also spend time with other people together. And it's nice to change up and have a variety. Like, I don't think I could ever go back to something fully monogamous, like one person forever. It's nice to be a bit different, because everyone, whenever I talk to anyone about it, everyone's like, you do that? Like, do you not want to settle down and have kids and buy a house? Like, and I'm like, do I have to? Do I need to? And it's really nice to be able to like try different things that maybe someone isn't into. Yeah. That you think, I want to try it. But if you're with someone that is just like a flat out no, like, you're never going to get that opportunity.
There's so many things you've touched on in that section. I mean, the first part I think that's really important is emphasizing the experimentation phase of single, whether that is doing it in a monogamous way or in a polyamorous way, but not necessarily just accepting that you've got to fall into yet again another relationship and to get back into the dating scene, because it seems like it's the only way. It's the thing that got you to where, and me to where we were when we ended our relationships or left them, because there was some sort of pull to try something different. And actually that whole point of becoming single partially in our cases was because we wanted to know what else was out there or what we really wanted, who we really were within that. So whether that comes about consciously because you choose it or because a relationship comes to an end, making sure you spend the time not only healing if it's been a little bit traumatic, but also then going, actually, what do I want? And questioning the status quo, I think it's one of the most empowering parts. But then, yeah, this whole idea of polyamory, which I'm very aware of, I mentioned not long ago in two previous episodes. One was about how much we can learn from the polyamorous community, and I'll come back to that in a second, but also cuffing season. There's this idea that you must run away from cuffing season. I think it's spoken about in a bit of a negative light of watch out for all the people that might not want to actually settle down with you. And I go back to this idea of, well, even if you are after a long-term monogamous setup, you've got to do some of the short-term stuff, whether you intend it as short-term or not. But you've got to learn about relationship. What makes anyone good and qualified to suddenly be in a 7 to 8 to 10 year relationship if you're not doing any of the practice on short relationships as well? But for me, the observation of the polyamorous community, and you've touched on it a little bit, is the idea of communication and how upfront you are and remain to be in what's going on in your dynamic. Because as you described, you said you see other people, you sometimes see people together, but you always talk about when there is somebody new and that you're venturing out. What's the motivation behind sharing it? Because some people would go, well, you're not boyfriend and girlfriend, so he's not obliged to know, and you're not obliged to know either. What was the decision making between the two of you that meant we're going to still share that information?
Some of it comes from safety. So he is now somewhat my safety net. So it was very much, well, if you're being my safety net, it kind of has to go two ways. It's not a one-way street. So if I've got to tell you what I'm up to, you can't then not tell me what you're up to. Like, it doesn't work that way. For me, because I see women more, as a man, he finds it very interesting to know what I've got up to on my adventures. So there is a level of teasing and a level of mental foreplay in its own way for me on that side. For me, I enjoy knowing what he gets up to, because he then's like, but when I get back to you, and that's where it comes in, because it is almost like we can go weeks where we don't see each other for 6 to 8 weeks. Like, you have to do something in the middle to keep yourself moving and motivated to see each other again. And like, it has to happen all the time. Like, one of the things we both have different lives, we both have different setups. And like, even yesterday, for example, we both have a point where he's changed job, not changed his job, but he's changed site location. So that comes with a change in routine, it comes in a change of travel, it comes with a lot of varieties, whereas he may have been only an hour away, so was staying near hometown, he's now 6 hours away. It changes how it thinks. So every time we have that location change, we give it a couple of weeks, see how that's going, and we always end up with a chat of, right, how is this, how are we going to adapt to this, what's going on this time. He's much further away, but I run my own business, so there's a chat currently going on of, well, you can just take your laptop and we're getting a house up here because I'm going to be here for over a year, well, you can come and work at mine for a week every couple of months, so that there's not such, even though there will be a feast and famine effect, it won't just be famine, 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 famine. And that's where the communication's needed for us, is we need to be able to know we're on the same wavelength. We have conversations every now and again, and it's more him to me, is am I holding you back from dating somebody? Am I holding you back from finding somebody? Am I holding you back? And I think for us, and that's where the communication is needed, when you're not in something that is pre kind of determined as monogamous, and right, we're going to be doing this, we're going to be doing that, I'm seeing you this weekend, we're going to go to my mum's, we're going to go here, we're going to go see my friend, because we don't have that kind of what I would say is an automatic relationship status, and therefore the prerequisites that go with that, we have to a level, keep in touch with one another. Because I could easily have gone on a networking event for business, bumped into someone while I was there, started a conversation, really liked them, and then gone, oh, I can't go any further because of. So we have that kind of conversation to kind of remind ourselves that we don't have to stay in this friendship that we have. But if we do, brilliant, it works for both of us really well. But if at some stage I or he finds somebody that we kind of want to look into something a little bit more long term, we'll both go, cool, enjoy yourself.
And there's potential, no, for that becoming something that goes, still goes alongside, depending on the person that you come across and their views on the world, is that your friendship doesn't have to end as a result of anything else that does become more of a primary partner or a nesting partner situation, versus what is very flexible for you guys around schedules, location, and so on.
Yeah, exactly. And we've said, like, there's a potential that we don't know. So we've been friends for 5 years. My mum calls it my situationship.
What? It's interesting. Why does she call that a situationship? And a lot of people because probably would, because it's not.
Never met him. Because she's like, I don't know. She was like, if I'm to walk past him in the street, I have not a clue. Like, the very first time. So, I did a drive to Middlesbrough. We stayed for a long weekend up there. And because he was working up there. So I went to him. And my mum was terrified. Like, my mum is one of them people. She's never, ever worried about my driving. Never worried. She's always worried about other people's driving. And I have to let my mum know that I've arrived anywhere safely that's like an hour and a half out of home, like, without a doubt. Like, even when I'm going to come to the New Year's Eve or I'm coming to Galentine's, I'm going to get to you and be like, hang on a second, need to just text my mum to tell her I've arrived safely. Like, I have to do that. But my mum also is very aware of who I'm going to. So my mum already knows who you are. So if she hasn't heard from me, she's going to get my sister to message you to make sure I've got there safe if she hasn't heard from me. But because I keep her very separate and him very separate, the drive took me an hour longer. I got stuck in traffic and my mum was like panicking because she couldn't get hold of him because I refused to let her have any access whatsoever. And my mum was like, it's just your situationship, you might change your mind, it's just the situation you're in at the moment. Like, okay, mum, right.
But it's interesting because to me a situationship often gets that title when somebody wants more than the other person and there is a push-pull dynamic, whereas what I hear from what you describe is that this is something that you've both sat down and you both continue to talk about, but it suits both of you and neither of you is looking to escalate. And maybe one day something could change because one of you goes, actually, you know what? I really like spending a week here. Could it be 2 weeks? And then it's 4 weeks. And then suddenly you moved in because of, but that doesn't mean that this part was a situationship. It's sounds like it's what you both want, enjoy, and what works for you both.
I tried to explain it to her. She's very old school. I think she does struggle to a level because both of my sisters are in relationships. One of my sisters is married with two children. My other sister is getting married. So I am very much the oddball. Mm-hmm. And I don't follow the path. Like my mum, literally the moment I walk into her house, she's like, what's going on this time? Like, what's up? What's happening? Like, I'm like, I've got an idea. And my mum's like, oh gosh, here she goes again. Like, what's the one this time? Like, I'm that child. I'm going to throw a curveball, like, all the time. But the one thing I would say is, like, when I turned around and cried at my mum that I wasn't happy in my relationship anymore, my mum tried to convince me to stay the course. She said, try and do all the things. And I was like, mum, I just know, like, in my gut is telling me that I need to walk away. And she did, like most mums. But about a year ago, my mum turned around and said it was the best thing I ever did. Took her a few years to realise, but she was like, you've grown as a person, you're much more back to the person you were as a child. you've grown exponentially. She was like, you're running a business, you've taken on your sister. She's like, I'm so proud of you, because you never would have done that had you have stayed and listened to me.
We're going to take a pause for a moment. These podcast episodes are usually 30 minutes long, and me and Alex seem to be able to talk forever about these things. So I have split the podcast into two parts so that you can break this down and know that you've reached an end point. And if you want to keep listening to the rest of the interview with Alex, then go to part 2 that I'll have linked in the description.